Okay, so this evening we're in Genesis chapter 42. We finished up last time talking about the famine that was given to Pharaoh in a dream by God. It was interpreted by Joseph that there would be 7 years of plenty in Egypt, followed by 7 years of famine. And at the end of chapter 41, beginning in verse 50, now before the year of famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. And so it talks about Manasseh and Ephraim. And then later it says, verse 54, the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said. And there was famine in all the lands. In verse 56, the famine was spread over all the face of the earth. And then verse 57, the famine was severe in all the earth. So we pick up in Genesis 42 in verse 1. Now Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. And Jacob said to his sons, "Why are you staring at one another?" And he said, "Behold, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt. Go down there and buy some for us from that place, so that we may live and not die." Then 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain from Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "I am afraid that harm may befall him." So the sons of Israel came to buy grain among those who were coming, for the famine was in the land of Canaan also. Now Joseph was the ruler over the land. He was the one who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. When Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. And he said to them, "Where have you come from?" And they said, "From the land of Canaan to buy food." But Joseph had recognized his brothers, and although they did not recognize him. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them and said to them, "You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." Then they said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies." Yet he said to them, "No, but you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." But they said, "Your servants are 12 brothers in all, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more." Then Joseph said to them, "It is as I said to you, you are spies. By this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you that he may get your brother while you remain confined, that your words may be tested, whether there is truth in you. But if not, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies." So he put them all together in prison for 3 days. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison. But as for the rest of you, go, carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me, so your words may be verified, and you will not die." And they did so. Then they said to one another, "Truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore this distress has come upon us." And Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood." They did not know, however, that Joseph understood, for there was an interpreter between them. And he turned away from them and wept. But when he returned to them and spoke to them, he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. So let's stop there. There's a lot there. Again, it was said three times at the end of Genesis chapter 41 that the famine was severe over all the earth. You can see in verse 5 of chapter 42, a fourth time, it actually says, "For the famine was in the land of Canaan." So this is not just a local famine, but many, many people groups were affected by this famine which God had told Pharaoh about. And so Jacob's supplies are dwindling down, and he sort of reprimands his sons, as it were. Right, verse 1, "Why are you sitting around staring at one another?" And he tells them to go to Egypt because he has heard, verse 2, that there was grain in Egypt, right? And so this is probably because other people, right, had gone down to Egypt, right, living on a trade route. And so the word is getting around that there's food in Egypt, even though there's a famine in Canaan. Verse 3, the 10 brothers of Joseph went down to buy grain. And of course, verse 4, Jacob doesn't send his youngest son, Benjamin. Why? He doesn't send his youngest son, Benjamin, because this is Rachel's only son who's still alive, at least as far as Jacob knows. And Rachel, of course, is Jacob's first love. So Jacob has this special love that he has set upon Rachel's two sons, Joseph, whom he assumes is now dead, and now Benjamin. And of course, he doesn't want to be left without Benjamin as well. So he holds Benjamin back and sends his 10 older brothers, Reuben and so forth, down to Egypt to buy food. Verse 6, Joseph was the ruler over the land. This is a very high title. A very high title. In the Hebrew, very high title. And then in the Greek Septuagint, this is Kyrios. This is Lord. Right? And we'll see this again in verses 30 and 33, this idea of Joseph as Lord of Egypt. So again, very high title for Joseph, which was bestowed upon him by Pharaoh, as we saw. Also in verse 6, you see there, very important, Joseph's brothers came and bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. So if you turn back with me to Genesis 37, just to remind you, Genesis 37, verse 7, pick up in verse 5, technically. 37, verse 5. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. And he said to them, "Please listen to this dream which I have had. For behold, we were binding," he's speaking to his brothers, "we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf rose up and also stood erect. And behold, your sheaves gathered around and bowed down to my sheaf." And so verse 8 there, his brothers recognize what's going on here. Are you actually going to reign over us? Are you actually going to rule over us? So they hated him even more. Genesis 37, Joseph's first dream at that time. And of course, down in verse 9, if we go back to Genesis 42, right? So we have in verse 6, Joseph's brothers coming and bowing down to Joseph. Of course, they don't know it's Joseph. But in verse 9, Joseph remembers the dreams that he had. Right? And so we see the fulfillment of these dreams which Joseph was given way back when he still lived in Canaan many, many years ago. That's important because verse 7, Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he disguised himself to them and spoke to them harshly. Verse 8, it says they did not recognize him. Why? I mean, this may be hard to believe, maybe not, right? Depending on how you view this, right? How could they not know it was Joseph, right? It's been 20 years. 20 years since they have seen Joseph. And more importantly than that, the last time they saw Joseph, he was how old? 13. Okay? 13 years old. All right? So this is a long time, right? Long time to be removed from them. All right? In addition to that, he's now an Egyptian, probably clean shaven. Right? He doesn't look like he's from Canaan. In addition, he's the vice president of Egypt. What are the odds that your 13-year-old brother, whom you sold to a band of Midianite traders for a few shekels of silver, is now the vice president of Egypt? Right? I mean, this is outlandish. It's actually not hard to believe that Joseph's brothers do not recognize him. But he recognizes them, right? He's one of the youngest brothers, so they were older than he was. They probably haven't changed as much, all right? So he sees them, he recognizes them. Verse 7, he speaks to them harshly, all right? He speaks to them harshly. Right? In essence, this entire chapter is about Joseph testing his brothers. Testing his brothers, all right? There's no doubt about that. We will see that over and over and over again, especially in the issue of Benjamin. Right? Benjamin. In some sense, Joseph wants to know, have they learned their lesson all these years, or are they still the same? Okay? And so he speaks to them harshly. Verse 7. Verse 9. He accuses them. You are spies. You have come to look at the undefended parts of our land. Literally, the nakedness of the land. Right? So he's accusing them. And accusing them of having nefarious motives for coming to Egypt. Now, he knows why they're there. Right? But again, he's testing. Verse 10. They deny it. No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. All right? So they call him Lord here in verse 10. Verse 11, we are all sons of one man. We are honest men. That's a laugher. All right? That's a laugher. Now, it just so happens that in this exchange, they will tell the truth. In fact, they will tell too much of the truth, which they get in trouble for with Jacob later on. All right? But they are telling the truth here. They're literally starving in Canaan. They want to buy food, and they're being straight up here. Okay? They've brought money. They want to buy food. Verse 12, Joseph accuses his brothers again, accusing them of coming to look at the nakedness of the land. Verse 13, now they spill the beans, right? Your servants were 12 brothers in all, so they're still counting Joseph, right? The sons of one man in the land of Canaan, and behold, the youngest is with our father, which is true, and one is no more, which is not true, but they believed it to be true, all right? It's not true, but they believed it to be true. So in all of these things, they're telling the truth here. Joseph accuses them again in verse 14, and then you can see verse 15, he says explicitly, by this you will be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from this place unless your youngest brother comes here. And he says, send one of you that he may get your brother. So basically, the 10 of you need to pick one of you, right, to go back, get your youngest brother, come here, while the other 9 of you hang out in jail. Right? And the irony of that ought not be lost on us, right? That his brothers should go to prison, because that's exactly where he ended up. All right? That's exactly where he ended up. So he puts them together, verse 17, in prison for 3 days. On the third day, verse 18, Joseph changes his mind a little bit. The challenge softens a bit. Do this and live, for I fear God. This is Elohim. This is not, right, Yahweh, as we talked a little bit a couple times ago in the Q&A session, but so this is Elohim. Verse 19, if you are the honest men that you say you are, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, in your cell where you are. But as for the rest of you, go, carry grain for the famine of your households, and bring your youngest brother to me. So it was 9 are staying, 1 is going. And Joseph softens the bargain and says, one of you is staying. I will send 9 of you back to get your youngest brother and bring him to me. And to this, of course, they weren't in a very strong place with regard to bargaining. So at the end of verse 20, this is what they did. They agreed to do. So they have this little huddle here beginning in verse 21, the 10 brothers. Right? Presumably, perhaps part of the discussion that's not here is they're trying to decide which one of them is going to stay and which are the 9 that are going to go. But in the course of this huddle, they speak to each other the following. Verse 21, truly we are guilty concerning our brother, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us, yet we would not listen. Therefore, this distress has come upon us. All right? So, There's a clearly a sense of this divine recompense, or this divine retribution, this divine payback. So their sins have finally caught up with them. All right? And there's actually an interesting thing in the text here. You see, it says, because we saw the distress of his soul when he pleaded with us. If you actually go back to chapter 37, where Joseph was sold, It's not there. It's not there. That Moses, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, doesn't tell us that in chapter 37, but he clearly tells us here that Joseph was pleading literally for his life. And his brothers would not listen. Right? His brothers obviously have guilt over what they did. And they've been living with it now for 2 decades. Alright? This is a big deal. Verse 22. Reuben answered them, saying, "Did I not tell you, do not sin against the boy, and you would not listen? Now comes the reckoning for his blood." So do me a favor, let's go back, let's verify. This is actually in the text, chapter 37. I want you to see it. Chapter 37. So beginning in verse 18, this is the plot against Joseph. They plotted, verse 18, against him to put him to death. They said to one another, "Here comes this dreamer. Now then, come and let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits." Verse 21, but Reuben, the oldest... Now Reuben's already in trouble. If you remember, he slept with Jacob's other wife. All right, so Reuben, he's got issues. All right, but here in verse 21, Reuben heard this and rescued Joseph out of their hands and said, "Let us not take his life." Reuben further said to them, "Shed no blood. Throw him into this pit that is in the wilderness, but do not lay hands on him, for the express purpose that he might rescue him out of their hands to restore him to his father." So this is true. Okay. So Reuben, perhaps justifiably so, feels less guilty than his other brothers because he was actually trying to save Joseph's life. And actually, if you remember the story later in chapter 37, Reuben disappears for a while, and that's when Joseph disappears and gets sold. Right? It was Judah's idea. Right? So now in 42:22, Reuben is basically giving them the "I told you so." Right? And then at the last portion of verse 22, it says, "Now comes the reckoning for his blood." Where does this come from? Where does this come from? Okay, stick your thumb in Genesis 42. Go back to Genesis 9. Genesis 9. Genesis 9. This is after the flood, in the context of God making a covenant with Noah and his descendants. Remember the rainbow? Genesis 9. And in verse 4, God's speaking to Noah, "You shall not eat flesh with its life," that is, its blood. Verse 5, "And surely I will require your lifeblood. From every beast I will require it. And from every man, from every man's brother, I will require the life of man." Verse 6, "Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God he made man." Right? So again, orally, this word comes down, Noah, through Abraham, through Isaac, Jacob, to Jacob's oldest son now, who's plenty old to understand the oral tradition here. And so Reuben clearly sees that this is being played out in the life of him and his brothers. The divine retribution being played out. God said to Noah that anyone who sheds a man's blood, his blood will be required of him. And this is clearly what Reuben is seeing here. All right? Verse 23. They did not know. The brothers did not know, however, that Joseph understood. Literally, the Septuagint says, was listening. So it seems that this huddle was happening kind of in some way in Joseph's presence. Right? Joseph understood. Okay? They didn't realize that Joseph understood what they were saying. It says, "For there was an interpreter between them." Now, I struggled with this, trying to figure out what that means. So, here's what it means. They were speaking to Joseph in the language of the Canaanites. Joseph was speaking back to them in what language? Egyptian. So when they get in their huddle, they're speaking to each other in a Canaanite language, right? In the language of Canaan, in the language that they grew up with. They don't realize Joseph knows their language, because Joseph's not speaking to them in their language. So Joseph, standing nearby them, near enough to the huddle to understand, to hear and understand what they're saying, they don't know he knows what they're saying, because he's not speaking to them in their language. But he knows it. And when he hears what they were saying, and what does he hear? What does he hear? What he hears is guilt. It's right there on the face of the text, verse 21. Truly we are guilty concerning our brother. He hears it. And as a result of hearing it and understanding it, verse 24, he turns away from them and he weeps. He weeps. And there's probably a lot of emotions going on here. Okay? Probably a lot of emotions going on. 20 years, think about that. 20 years he hasn't seen his father or his little brother. There's probably an aspect here as well, which we will see, because we've already seen some of Joseph and his righteousness, and we will see it again throughout the rest of Genesis up to chapter 50. There's also probably some amount of tenderness here as well. But Joseph hears, he turns, he weeps. When he returned to them, right, after going and cleaning up what we would imagine to be mascara, right, vice president of Egypt, he's probably all done up, cleans himself up, and he speaks to them. He took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. Okay? Now, why Simeon? It's not clear from the text, at least in direct context. But there's probably two reasons why he takes Simeon. Number one, Simeon is the second-born son. He doesn't want to take Reuben. Why? He's recently discovered that Reuben's about as good as it gets among his brothers. Okay? So, in some sense, he's exonerated Reuben based on what he's heard. Okay? Secondly, and this comes out of the Jewish tradition, the Targum, the Jews themselves, as they write commentaries on this text, believed it was Simeon, based on Simeon's personality, which we have already seen. Do you remember the rape of Dinah? Simeon and Levi are the ones who basically band everybody together and go in and kill all of the men of Shechem. So it's likely, according to the Jewish tradition, that Simeon was probably the meanest of the bunch. And so Joseph, looking at the 10 of them, I'm looking around the table here, trying to figure out who the meanest of the bunch is. Okay? He looks at his brothers. Reuben has been exonerated. Simeon's the next in line. Mm-hmm. And he looks at Simeon, and he remembers, the Jewish tradition would say, he remembers Simeon and his meanness. And so he throws him in jail. He's the one who's held captive. Okay. Pick up in verse 25. Then Joseph gave orders to fill their bags with grain and to restore every man's money in his sack and to give them provisions for the journey. And thus it was done for them. So they loaded their donkeys with their grain and departed from there. And as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder at the lodging place, he saw his money. And behold, it was in the mouth of his sack. Then he said to his brothers, my money has been returned, and behold, it is even in my sack. And their hearts sank, and they turned trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? When they came to their father, Jacob, in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly with us, and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father today in the land of Canaan. And the man, the lord of the land, said to us, by this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your households, and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Now it came about, as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. And their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, you may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. Verse 38. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. All right. So, Joseph, and the reason, so it may, you may or may not see tenderness in Joseph's weeping, but I hear, I think we begin to see it, right? Joseph sends them back with grain and money. Joseph is giving them a gift, right? Free of charge. That's the definition of a gift is. Right? Now, verse 25, right? We see the money put back in the sack and the bags full of grain. Verse 27, so one of them opened his sack to feed his donkey, and he sees his money there, right there in the mouth of the sack. And verse 28, their hearts sank. Their hearts sank. Literally, their hearts went out of them. All right? And they turned, trembling to one another, saying, what is this that God has done to us? What is this emotion?
Fear.
Fear. Yeah, fear. Right? First of all, they're not honest men. That we know. Okay? And so now, what's their first, why are they afraid? They're afraid because they know they're going to be accused. Right? They know they're going to be accused. This is an odd thing. I mean, have you ever walked out of a store and realized that you underpaid for something? Mm-hmm. Right? I assume people who have consciences, right, that sort of, or you get an extra 20 out of the Mac machine. Right? That first impulse is, you know, you didn't do anything wrong. Right? But there's this impulse. And that's what they have here. Right? That's this, they're afraid. They don't know how to react. Right? So, and remember, Joseph has charged them nothing. Right? He's saving their lives free of charge. I wonder if that sounds familiar. Okay. All right. So they get back to Jacob in the land of Canaan. And they tell him what happened. They refer to him twice, verses 30 and 33, as the Lord of the land. Okay? This is very high title. All right? And so they tell him everything that's happened. And then in verse 35, it came about as they were emptying their sacks that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. All right? So if they were afraid in verse 27 and 28, right, they're out of their minds afraid now. They have no idea how to respond to this. All right? And in fact, we will see as we get into chapter 43 that they put off going back to Egypt for a long time. Almost unbelievable. It'll be unbelievable to us. I mean, remember, Simeon's in jail in Egypt. And it's like, yeah, just leave him go. Right? But some of that is born out of this fear that when they get back to Joseph, what are they going to say? Hey, thanks for the grain. Oh, and by the way, here was all the money that we had too. Right? That, what do you say? Yeah, you get that extra 20 out of the Mac machine and you walk into the bank. What do you say? Extra money. Right? What do you say? The bank teller looks at you funny. Like, what'd you do? Right? Jacob here is very important, right? Jacob, verse 36, there's accusation. This is a heavy accusation. Right? He's speaking to his sons. He holds his sons accountable. You see that? There's a very important word in verse 36. You. You have bereaved me of my children. It's your fault Joseph is dead. I mean, he literally has no idea how much of their fault it is. Okay? All he knows is that they weren't watching this 13-year-old boy closely enough such that he was devoured by animals. That's all he knows. Right? He doesn't know that they sold him off to a bunch of Midianite traders. Right? Nonetheless, he still accuses them. You have bereaved me of Joseph. And then look, how does he view Simeon here? Dead. As good as dead. And you, after bereaving me of Joseph, and now bereaving me of Simeon, now you want to take Benjamin back to that place? You are out of your mind. Out of your mind. Reuben, again, Reuben, some redemptive qualities here. We saw that in Genesis 37. We saw that here in Genesis 42 earlier, and now we see it again. Reuben speaks to his father. This is also very heavy promise, right? Imagine your two sons, your two children, right? This is the promise. You may put my two sons to death if I do not bring Benjamin back to you. That's what he's saying. So send Benjamin with us, that we might go and get Simeon, that we might go appease the Lord of the land, that we might go and say, there's been a mistake, we got our money back, sorry about that. And on the life of my two sons, I promise you, I will bring Benjamin, your favorite and youngest son, back to you. I will not let happen to Benjamin what happened to Joseph. Okay. Verse 38 is a cliffhanger. Right? It's a cliffhanger. There's a dramatic pause at the end of verse 38. The tension is building. Jacob says, "My son Benjamin shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you're taking, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow." Jacob is adamant. Adamant at the end of verse 38, chapter 42. And so I'll leave it there. We're not going to go into chapter 43 tonight. Right? But as I was studying, I was reading through John Calvin's commentary on Genesis. And again, just application for us. And we've done this before, right? Because we've seen this long and winding road. This is what Calvin says in his commentary on Genesis 42. He says, "Our indolence," which is laziness, "our laziness hinders us from perceiving God with the eyes of faith as holding the government of the world. Whereas scarcely any more illustrious or illustrative representation of divine providence is to be found than this history furnishes. Let pious readers carefully exercise themselves in meditation upon it, in order that they may acknowledge those things which in appearance are fortuitous to be directed by the hand of God." So what does Calvin see? I mean, think about this, right? Think about this. The sale of Joseph by his brothers, the jailing of Joseph, the rising of Joseph to be vice president of Egypt, then the famine in Canaan, which will ultimately lead to Jacob's family going down to Egypt from Canaan, and all of that serves one end, which we have said before, which was the promise of God to Abraham in Genesis chapter 15. Your people will be slaves in another country for 400 years, and then I will bring them back. Look at what God is doing in all of these decades, centuries even. God is taking this long and winding road, and what is He doing? He's using it so that He might fulfill His promises to His faithful people. And so Calvin sees that. He sees this long and winding road, which we should see. We should see with the eyes of faith the long and winding roads that we are on. And we have to believe that this long and winding road is all governed by the gracious and merciful hand of God. He's sovereign in all of it. And so that's why I say all the time, God hates complaining, because most of the time we're complaining about our circumstances. And the reason why God hates complaining, and complaining is a sin, is because our circumstances have been ordained by Him for our good and for His glory. Amen?
Amen.